You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast. This is episode 140. Today, Jamie and I are going to be talking about what does godly masculinity look like? And Jamie, as we've talked about these kind of issues before, we've talked about masculinity and what it means to be a man in certain areas, but I think it's worth coming back to just because I really see godly masculinity as somewhat at the center of so many of the issues of our day. As we know, as Christians, there is a whole slew of confusion going on today, especially revolving around gender and sexuality and what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. You know, it's interesting just to like look back at some historical statements, like what people in the church were arguing for and against, like even 100 years ago. And I just don't think they could conceive of some of the issues going on in our day and what the church is up against. I think it's worth giving this biblical explanation of masculinity because of all that confusion, because there's this vacuum that will take the place of truth if we don't speak to these issues. Jamie, a big thing I see in all of this is when we blur the lines that God has established, especially with regard to when we're talking about gender and sexuality, when we blur the lines that God has established, we are messing things up big time. We are opposing God ultimately because he's the creator, he's the designer. He's the one who set it up this way. And when he created human beings, he didn't create us as neutered, androgynous beings, right? We are sexual beings. We have a gender. That is how God created us. You know, I think there's almost like it's a hidden, or not so hidden maybe, but it's a type of Gnosticism going on today that says what matters is, of course, human value, but, you know, they don't root that in a biblical worldview. But it's like the soul is what matters. The crude matter, you know, Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back says, we're just luminous beings, not this crude matter. That is completely in opposition to what the Bible says. We are embodied souls and also ensouled bodies. We have a body-soul makeup, an immaterial and a material side to us. And that material side is not accidental. It's not something that is just the shell for holding the soul. Our bodies matter and our sexuality matters. And I think we just got to go back to the roots of all this. So from the very beginning, Genesis is so foundational. It's so important for so many of the issues of our day. And I think it's no surprise that in an era when we have a culture with its own creation myth, right? With the evolution and Darwinism and goo to you via the zoo, that philosophy completely obliterates any sense of design, right? So the only other option is we are accidental, or we are accidentally the way we are. There's no purpose, there's no intention, no design behind it. And so when we have that as the reigning myth, creation myth, in our schools, in our universities, in the press, in the media, all over, then of course that is going to radically mess things up for people's understanding of what it means to be human and what it means to be a man and a woman. God made men to be men, and he made women to be women. And it is good to be masculine. If you are a man, it is good to be feminine if you are a woman. And by the way, we don't pit the sexes against each other. Many people, when they hear us talking like this, they think that, oh, this is a way of reestablishing some kind of oppressive patriarchy and belittling women. No, absolutely not. This is God's design. This is how he established it from the beginning. And if we blur those lines, again, we're going to have all kinds of fallout that we're seeing today with gender confusion, gender fluidity, people going in for surgeries to emasculate themselves or defeminize themselves, whatever it might be. It's all satanic. Let's just put that out there, that it's very satanic. It's anti-God mindset because it's opposing God's perfect design. So from the beginning, this is what I see in Genesis 1. And I think this is good to just kind of set the table for the conversation we're going to have here. We read this so often, and yet it's so important that we come back to this. So this is what it says in Genesis 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Verse 28, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And then it goes on from there. But one of the things that I just want to draw attention to, Jamie, as we're talking about godly masculinity is, number one, men have a specific calling that men are to fulfill. And if they don't fulfill, they will go into all kinds of sinful distortions and degradations because they aren't fulfilling God's mandate. And that is that men are called to, number one, have dominion. And see, I think this is something that probably just isn't covered enough. When we read these passages, we just think, oh, okay, yeah, this means we're different from the fish, we're different from the birds. But actually, this is something, and again, it's this emphasis is brought up again in Psalm 8, but this is something that from the very beginning, God wanted us to understand something. We were created in his image, meant to reflect his good rule over his creation. Now, that doesn't mean that we abuse things. That doesn't mean we destroy the earth. Like, who cares? It means that we are good stewards. Absolutely. It means that we are to subdue the world in the sense of cultivate and work the ground. That comes in Genesis 2, work and keep the garden. But this is something so foundational that we need to see, that men were created to rule. They were created to bring about this kind of good authoritative dominion over creation. This is why you have that desire as a man, especially as a man, to create things, to build things, to establish things, to in a sense, it's all part of the mandate to rule. You're wanting to do something that is in you. And I say especially as men, because number one, this was a calling for Adam to do. He was to work and keep the garden. That's part of the dominion being laid out. Obviously, women have a role in that, and they're equally important in this mandate. But notice what Genesis 2 says, and then I'm going to get your thoughts on this, Jamie. It's like God says to Adam specifically that he was there to work it and keep it in the garden. And then, you know, we get to verse 18. He says, it's not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. And then he creates, you know, eventually he creates Eve as that right or that fit helper for Adam. And I think that when we downplay the significance of there's men and women and there's clear distinctions, then it's that this won't make sense to people. If we talk about this, what I'm about to say, it won't make sense. But women were created first and foremost to be the helpmate for the man. And this is something where if he's going to carry out his dominion mandate, his creational mandate to work and to keep and to rule, right? He needs the woman to come alongside and support him in his calling. And so if we get this backwards and we say, well, it's actually, they're just working together and they kind of have equal and exact roles, then we're going to miss some important aspects that come up later in the Bible. But before I go to other passages that support what I'm starting to say here, Jamie, what are your thoughts on this, the way that it's laid out in Genesis?
It's an important place to start because it lays down, it really challenges so many of the dichotomies that we have in our society today or in our culture today, in the world today, that first of all, like you pointed out, the original concept as God designed it is that you had men and women. So right from the very beginning of God's creation, we were not the same. It was not the sameness. Yes, same in value, same in identity, same in imaging, you know, the glory of God, the attributes of God, at least in a human sense. We obviously do not have them in the divine sense that God does, but yet are still different and are still called for different purpose and gifted for different purpose and used for different purpose. All of these things directly challenge the very notions that are the underpinnings of today, which is, as you pointed out, we've actually moved beyond just allowing people to swap genders and all these sort of things to now we as a culture are denying the concept of gender's existence at all, which is just wild. Jason, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've seen a lot more recently in like news articles where they'll say so-and-so was assigned male at birth or something, you know, something to that effect, where they're pretending like we just made up these categories and it's literally not a thing, right? That you only have one gender, in a sense, human, and what that looks like then can take multiple hundreds of different positions. And what's ironic in all of this is you think, okay, well, if the culture says that there's really no genders and anybody can behave or act however they want, but then at the same time, culture seems specifically interested in removing any sort of masculine trait from society at all. So it's like, oh, this one aspect is completely bad. So it seems like they actually want to just have one gender and it's more feminine in nature than it is masculine. And that's what you see sort of with all these things. And so it's like Genesis 1, Genesis 2 specifically shoots that whole argument right out of the water to say, no, God does have a design. There are two genders, and God did intend for masculine attributes of biological males to be a good thing.
Yeah, and I think what you see with so much going on, and the reason why people can even say things like toxic masculinity, you know, it shows that people have this idea that when you get down to it, women are going to be the feminine role. In fact, I won't even say women, the feminine role is innately better than the masculine role, right? You see this in so many ways. You see that, you know, women are prized for being women in different ways, but men are sort of belittled, and it's demeaning when a man behaves like a man, right? And so what we want to say is it's neither that a man is better than a woman or a woman is better than a man, but both must fulfill their calling and their design according to God's specifications. And so when we get that mixed up, then it's, you know, and you start expecting men to behave like women and to sort of be these feminized males, then they're no longer carrying out their creation mandate. They're no longer ruling in the good God-ordained way that they were designed to. And you look at so many of the things like the crime rate and so many things going on, and how it's you know, it's no secret, I should say, that there's far more men that have been, you know, committing crimes and higher crime rate among men than women, things like this. Well, if men are always going to be stifled in terms of expressing masculinity, then wouldn't we expect some distortions to show up? Because if they aren't to be the men that they're created to be, what else do you have? You have a distorted vision of manhood. You have what is actually toxic masculinity, because it's not the masculinity that God designed for us. Even in the church, we see this, where, you know, there's certain things where we'll expect men to kind of take on the role that really is better suited for a woman. And I think that when we downplay the significance of masculinity and femininity, both of these as distinct roles given by God, then we're going to have all kinds of confusion, and people will feel like anytime a man wants to rule in a good way, in terms of take the lead on things and show a sense of ownership, and this is something I'm going to be responsible for, if that's stifled, then guess what? It's going to be showing up in bad ways and distorted ways, and it's going to be problematic for everybody, mostly for women, in fact. If we are not supporting this biblical view of manhood as something that is good, then, and we're stifling that, then we'll see all kinds of terrible things resulting.
Not only do we discourage the design of God, but we encourage what is actually against the design of God, or what God's word tells us not to do. Thinking of 2 Timothy 2:22, for example, you know, where the encouragement is to set aside your youthful passions, right, or your youthful lusts is literally the Greek word there. Instead, pursue righteousness and godliness and the design of God. And I think of even like 1 Kings chapter 2, one of my favorite encouragements as a man is, you know, the final words from King David to his son. And he's like, be resolute and stand firm like a man, right? Not like a human. It's no specific, like a man. Do what you were charged to do. That the masculine characteristics that God designed are for the purpose of ruling and reigning and caring for creation and living with purpose and fighting for the good and safety of other people. And all of those attributes are good when channeled into good purpose. And the funny thing is, our society is cool with this when it's convenient. I'm thinking of like in my home community, for example, just a month or so ago here, we had a pretty nasty flood in our community. We have these every so often. But guess who was out there pulling people out of cars and saving their lives? Guess who was out there, you know, throwing sandbags around? Guess who was, it primarily wasn't the women, right? It's the men. And, you know, fulfilling that purpose. And so it's like the very attributes we, as a society, we flame the bad aspects, human design, pervert what God's created, and then we call that masculinity, and then we say it's bad and we try and throw it out, instead of recognizing, no, wait a minute, we're doing exactly what God in his design told us not to do, and instead we're discouraging what God in his design calls us to do.
Yeah, and I think this plays out in so many different areas, but you can think of like times when there's conflict in the home. You know, if a man is told, don't step up, you know, don't lead, essentially don't be the head that God calls you to be. You know, God says the man is to be the head of the household. But our culture says, no men, if anything, they need to be subservient because of all the past aggressions and past terrible patriarchies in history. And so what happens is when you have passive male deal with the conflict as they should, whereas they should be those who come in as the steady voice of, look, this is what we need to do to resolve this conflict. This is how I'm going to lead you in that. This is how I'm going to be an example for you in how you deal with conflict. Instead, we have passive men saying, ask your mother or honey, could you deal with this? Cause I don't want it to get out of hand. Right. I mean, these are just kind of some basic examples, but when men are told, hey, you aren't supposed to be ruling because that's a bad thing, this is what you get as a result. You get men passively waving off their responsibilities, waving off their roles, waving off really any sense of, I need to live out my purpose and do what God calls me to do in this situation. And I think it's just significant when you look at so many passages. I said this is brought up, what is laid out for us in Genesis 1 and 2 is brought up again and again in Scripture. One very clear passage where we see this is 1 Corinthians 11. And again, this is talking about especially for Christians, but there's also just this creational mindset that is being laid out here. But it says, for a man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. This is verse 7 of 1 Corinthians 11. But woman is the glory of man, for man was not made from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. That is why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. And then it goes on to say, nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man nor man of woman, for as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman, and all things are from God. So Why do I bring up this? Because it fits with, if we understand God assigns this role to men, you are to rule. You are to righteously represent my rule and take dominion in a good way, not a way of spoiling creation, but of cultivating creation. And you're to lead in that effort. And the woman made from the man's rib, made to come alongside him as his helpmate, as his support, basically saying, we're going to do this together, but the woman is saying, I'm supporting what God has assigned for you primarily. And when we understand that right, then it makes sense what Paul says. He's not belittling women. Now, many people think of Paul as a, you know, some kind of misogynist after reading this, that, oh, woman is made for man, but man is not made for woman. What is this? Well, if you understand creational design from the beginning, that this is about how is the glory of God represented in creation, then it all makes sense that man would be the image of God, the image and glory of God, because that's God. God is the one who rules. He is the one who is the ultimate head, the ultimate father, the ultimate king. But as we come under his rule, we are also to rule as his representatives. And then the woman is her role is to come alongside and support. And that's why, you know, you can't make sense of the marriage passages if you don't have this understanding either, because again, the husband is called to be the head and the woman is called to submit, to respect. He's called to love. He's called to sacrificially love her, but he is the head. And so if we get this right and we see, okay, being head is not a bad thing. It's actually a very good thing when men finally step up and take responsibility and lead and show women how they can sacrifice for them. That's a good thing. That's we don't get that very much in this culture. That's not supported. That's stifled because of the way we talk about masculinity as, oh, it's this toxic thing. It's this anti woman thing to be super masculine. But that's just not the case.
Yeah, it's a good point. In fact, Jason, we would argue really that the Bible calls, I mean, I do believe fundamentally that men are made, you know, much more physical, much more aggressive than women. I think the Bible bears that out. But what is the purpose of that? Well, the purpose of that is to bring glory to God, ultimately. How? By serving, you know, your wife, serving your family, serving your community. And so you spend that energy for the glory of God. You spend it out in an appropriate way instead of what our culture says is, oh, you waste it, you know, in sexual passion, or you waste it in video games, or you waste it in whatever the flavor of the month is, something just so trivial in reality. And then we're surprised when it doesn't really work out. It's like, well, duh, you got to give people greater vision than just living for self or living for self-gratification. Even in the book of Nehemiah, you know, Nehemiah says that without a vision, the people perish. I think that's in Nehemiah chapter 5. And it's such a profound point to the fact that we must live with purpose. The Bible calls us to that. You know, we've been talking about this. That was God's original design. And when you have that vision for greater purpose, whether that be, you know, serving your wife, serving your kids, serving your community and family, you know, you're working and fighting and serving and doing all these things for the glory of God, for his eternal good. And what, you know, this isn't something, so let's say we have our skeptics out there, obviously, that are not Christians saying, well, but you're just talking from the perspective of having drunk the Kool-Aid. Yeah, I guess you could say that. But here's the thing. All sociological evidence backs up this very same point. In fact, I have a book that was given to me several years ago. It's called Men in Marriage. It's a book that was not written by a Christian. It is not Christian in any extent. But the argument of the book and the book's author is that men need marriage and society needs married men. And the basically his argument is when you give men great purpose, the result is they build societies and they create beautiful communities and they, you know, bring about stable societies where there's peace and prosperity and all these sort of things. And the book is loaded with all kinds of data to prove this. None of this is from the Bible. None of this is biblical at all. In fact, he doesn't mention the Bible, I think, really at all in the book, as I remember. It's been a while since I've read it, but it shows the fact that this is God's design, and it's backed up by all evidence extra-biblical. Not that we need extra-biblical sources to prove the Bible right. What I'm saying is, if you are skeptical at what the Bible says, just look at all these principles in practice. Societies are not better off with men that are more feminine. Societies are not better off with men that just live for their own personal gratification. Societies are better off when men are masculine per God's design, fighting, caring for, and cultivating and serving. Those societies are the ones that prosper.
That's right. Yeah. And just something else to touch on here, because I know a lot of people are going to hear some of this and think, okay, so it sounds like you're saying this sort of gruff, hard-edged, masculine man is the best. Well, I've seen men abuse power and be bad fathers and things like that when they take too much control. And here's what I would say to that. For everything, we want to see what the biblical design is, and we don't want to fall into distortions on either side, right? So, for instance, God is called a father, and that rubs some people the wrong way. I've talked to people who have said, it's hard for me to relate to that. I didn't have a good father. He was abusive, or, you know, he was not there for me, whatever it might be. But here's God. He's called a father. So the answer then isn't to say, oh, well, we don't want to encourage people to be fathers because there's bad examples. No, we encourage the kind of father that God is. We take our cues from him. And God is also a father who is compassionate and loving and merciful. So all that plays into what we're talking about here. Just to give an example from Ephesians 6, it says, you know, in the context where it says, children need to obey their parents in the Lord, for this is right. Then says, specifically in verse 4, fathers. Now, it doesn't say fathers and mothers, even though right before that it references honor your father and mother, but it puts it on, again, on the men, not because they're more important than mothers, but simply because they should take the lead here. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And Jamie, I was going to say this. I can think of a lot of examples where the dad in a certain situation had very masculine attributes in many ways, you know, maybe super outdoorsy or, you know, whatever the, you know, classic idea of masculinity might look like to somebody. That they embodied that, and yet they had sons that seem almost on the opposite end of the spectrum, interestingly. And you wonder, okay, well, why does that happen? And why do I see that with, it seems like increasing frequency. I haven't done a real study on this. But what I would say is this verse ties into all this because it says, look, fathers are to lead the way in discipline and instruction of the Lord. They're to take the lead on that. But this is important, to not provoke your children to anger. Well, the reason why this is called out is because if the dad is leading in this effort, it's very easy to slip into this sort of impossible taskmaster-driven kind of dad that says you need to meet every standard. Even if I'm not meeting this standard, you have to meet this standard. And otherwise, you're just a big disappointment to me. It's very easy to fall into that. I know a lot of people that would say, this is my experience of what my dad was like. And so that's why it always has to be shaped by grace. This rule, this authority, this leadership, it has to be shaped by grace, by compassion, by humility. You know, the father's not going in there saying, I never make mistakes, so that's why I get to lead. No. Dads make just as many tons of mistakes. That's not the point. The point is, as that role is fulfilled, according to God's design, you will be able to show the compassion that God the Father shows. You'll be able to show the gentleness a good masculine gentleness that's not passive and sort of wishy-washy and, you know, I don't know, I'll ask somebody else kind of gentleness. That's not really gentleness, that's just wishy-washy. But if you're gentle, that means that you're able to lead with a firm hand while still being tender at times. And that's important too. We don't want to ever downplay that as we're talking about biblical manhood, because that comes up a lot. But this is something where we need to see the distortions can't define the design. The distortions can't define the design. So if we're looking for God's design, then we have to be able to say, this is what Christians show up.
Along that line of thinking, you know, I really hate the term toxic masculinity. In my opinion, there is either masculinity or not, right? It's you look at the abuses of God's design and you wouldn't go, oh, that's bad masculinity. No, you'd say that's not masculine, right? Because that's not God's design. And we talked about this in episode 82, where we're dealing with the question, is the Bible sexist, which is a common issue that comes up, especially by feminists. They love to attack the Bible, saying it's feminist, it treats women bad. And we really debunked that myth in that episode to show you, actually, the Bible has a profound high respect for women. It's more profound than even our society. And I think that's really true. In fact, second wave feminism is anti-woman, in my opinion. It is so bad, and nobody can honestly say this is pro-woman, because it actually destroys women. It actually destroys femininity. It actually destroys, and who ends up profiting from feminism? It's men. So yeah, nice try, but fail. And you see that all throughout Scripture. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, where a husband is charged to live with his wife in an understanding way, with the warning that if he does not do that, then his prayers will be hindered before the Lord. And I've talked with guys who are, in my opinion, abusive to their wives, maybe not physically hitting them, but they're certainly not loving them and caring for them as the Lord calls them to. They're not denying self, giving up selfishness and serving, like Ephesians 5 says, right? You, as a man, get to die. Sounds awesome. That's what God calls you to do for your wife, as Christ does for the church, as men do for the good of others. And so you can't deny those commands like that really rein in that power, if you want to think of it that way, and say, no, that's not how masculinity works. Masculinity works where you spend out your strength and energy in the service and care and cultivation of society, of others, of the church, of the family, of your wife, of your children. That's wildly different than a chauvinism that pounds the chest and is self-centered and forces one's own will and does what's good for you, meeting your desires. That's not masculine at all.
Yeah, and just because we're talking a lot about masculinity, let me say this. I think women are wired by God to be better nurturers, and they're far more, many people would admit this, they're far more emotionally just centered, I guess you could say, that emotions play much more into the heart of who they are and how they relate to others. And in that sense, that's a good thing. And see, again, this is where we can get it wrong and think, oh, well, to say a woman's emotional, that's being misogynistic. No, actually, that is a good nurturing balance to the man's tendency to be firm and maybe tendency to be a little more on the stoic side. That is a good thing. We need the nurturing side of the woman in society. And, you know, it shows God's good design when we see how these balances play out. Not only in the household and the family, but in the church as a whole, and then in society beyond that. You know, 1 Corinthians 16:13 says, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. Okay, so there's a firm love that's being called for right there. So that means that it's not unloving to be stepping out and taking charge and restoring order, and again, it's back to taking dominion, that creational design, that's to be done in love. And so when a man steps in and says, look, I'm going to be the one that takes the lead here in restoring order to the situation, that doesn't mean he stamps out others. That's not restoring order. It means that he's lifting up others, the women included, and helping them to realize their potential and their design. But it all has to begin with, are men going to be acting like men, or are they going to be acting in this sort of feminized version of maleness that says, I can't step up because then I'm impeding the women around me, or I'm not letting them lead. These cultural ideas that are just so pervasive, that's what I think it's so important for us to confront and say, no, this is what God designed, and it's a good thing. We shouldn't be ashamed of it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.